Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, it's Seth Payne.
And I'm Sean Pendergast.
Did you know that Payne and Pendergast is both a radio show and a podcast? You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
That's awesome. Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or if you're a jump straight to the highlight person, we got you covered as well.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search for our names, my name first, obviously.
Hey!
And hit the follow button to get every minute of the show, your way and on your time.
It's the Payne and Pendergast Podcast. New episodes drop daily.
It's an Academy Sports and Outdoors Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from Pop Stroke and Katy, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Yeah, let's go. In for Ron Hughley, Clint Sterner, Sean Bajani, that is me, and he is him. Brandon Scott, a.k.a. B. Scott, in until 6 o'clock, broadcasting live from Pop Stroke and Katy. Come out, see us. I've got good beer flowing, good food, and can you ask for better weather than this? Absolutely. No, you cannot. Shout out to Shannon and Steve, who absolutely understand this. Shout out to the commissioner and Sissy Texan, who absolutely understand this. Shout out to Captain Fireball, to our guy Andrew, to our guy Guy Gene, who all understand this, and many more that are out here enjoying the weather, the beer, the food, us. And they've all got their free Area 45 pint glasses. Are you going to come get yours? There are plenty. Come on, get us. And we'll hook you up, man. Sports Radio 610, doing it right for you, the people of H-Town. 713-572-4610 if you'd like to be a part of the show. 572-4610. You can text in. Really appreciate all of the people being very active on the text line. Really some good stuff there throughout the course of the day. B. Scott talking a lot of Texans, a lot of Astros, Rockets. Good conversation there. I want to know, like, give me the pulse this segment of how important Sunday really is for the Houston Texans. How many of you guys already have this, like, as a dub?
Yeah.
It's the fake Oilers. They're 0-for as well. Ain't no way in hell it's going to get that bad, right? Where the Texans lose to the fake Oilers and go 0-4. How many of you people are actually feeling a little bit scary about this game? You could talk about it. And I say it comes down to more, B. Scott, than just like the historical numbers. We know what the deal is. From 1990, there have been four teams. From 1979, there have been six teams to overcome a 0-3 start and make it to the playoffs. The 92 Chargers are the only team in the history of the game to start 0-4. And they actually won the AFC West and went and lost to the I forgot who they lost to. They lost in the divisional round of the playoffs. The 92 Chargers. I don't want to have that conversation next week.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to overcome those types of historical odds next week. So what does it really come down to? You know the history. It's not good. It's not favorable. What does Sunday Texans v. Titans really come down to, win or lose?
Yeah, man, for me, it comes down to so look at it like this. Neither team has a good offense. Only one team has even a decent defense. Both teams are laughably bad at this point, okay? Laughably bad. We're talking about a pillow fight to some degree right now. And I hate to say that, but that's the way it is right now. But at the very least, we talked earlier about redeeming qualities. What are the few redeeming qualities that you can point to with the Texans right now when you try to find hope? And there are very few, if any at all, on offense. But overall, as a team, at the very least, you do have a defense that can wreck a game against an offense that is one of the few that is as putrid as yours, if not worse. And I would venture to say that this one is worse than yours.
Yeah.
And so, to me, it comes down to defense and just showing a competent offensive strategy. Like, not beating yourself. Like, I think in a lot of games, they've beaten themselves, whether it's penalties, whether it's in the last game, penalties and turnovers. I think if they play, and this is not to be cliche, this is like the honest to God truth. if they can just play a clean game offensively, to hell with being explosive, Bajani. Like, I'm not there yet. I don't feel like this is an explosive offense yet, and they're going to have to crawl before they walk. And then hopefully at some point they become an explosive offense. But we're not even having that conversation yet. If they can just run a clean operation and play true to form on defense, I think that will be just good enough to get them a win in this game. Desperation, the desperation level is high, obviously, because we talked about the historical odds. They cannot afford to lose to this team after already just having lost to a team that they had no business losing to after you look at that Jacksonville Jaguars team.
What's supposed to come first, though? Are you anticipating a cleaner operation or an explosive offense? Year one, and really to some degree year two of Bobby Slowick, the one thing that you could say about this offense is that they could dial up the explosives.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of sustaining drives, that was, to me, the same conversation that we're having right now through the first 3 weeks for this Texans team, because it's the clean operation. There have been struggles about getting in and out of the huddle. There have been struggles about not shooting your foot, with false starts, illegal formations, offensive penalties, like self-inflicted wounds there. It's the same issue. I almost expect this team to show a propensity to be explosive, and that be the reason why they get over the hump than anything else.
Not for me, because the caveat is that this is a different offense. And when we watch it, right, when we watch them execute the offense, a lot to me, you tell me if you disagree with this, but to me the offense is predicated on that clean operation. Like, that's where the whatever explosives are going to come, that's what it comes from. Like, it, so much of it is predicated on being buttoned up and staying on schedule, advantageous down and distance situations, running the football. Like, a lot of these basic things. The thing about this offense that makes it go, from my vantage point, is when you do all of the simple things. Clint talks about this all the time. The simple thing, savagely well, that's like his term for it. But that is it with this. And I know we've talked about wanting to see that no matter what offense they run. But with this offense specifically, it is a necessity. It is something that you absolutely have to do. You have to start here before you can get there. I'm not sure where the explosives come from if they're not able to stay on schedule, if they're not able to hit their layups, if they're not able to max protect on a four-man rush, if they can't establish a certain level of physicality where they can run the football. Like, they're not doing any of these things. Give me a clean operation, and once we get clean, then we can talk about getting an explosive play to Nico Collins other than a busted coverage, other than something that they gift wrap to you. Go out there and earn it. So that, to me, is what has to come first, specifically on how this offense is designed and how it runs.
Sounds like you want a Tom Brady, kind of a New England Patriot.
That's what they're doing. So,
okay.
I don't want
that, –
that's what they're doing.
That's what they're doing.
They didn't ask me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get to go in there and decide. So this is what they're doing. This is how they got to go do it.
The media asked Nick Caley yesterday, hey, man, this is a Tom Brady system, right? Like, what's going on here? When's it going to start to be cleaned up? Here's what Nick Caley said yesterday.
Well, again, this is our system. This is not a copy and paste New England Patriots system. Okay, if that's what you're alluding to, I'm asking. But relative to the system, I think everything we've done has been very intentional to be able to cater it around our players, to simplify the make the verbiage very. And we stripped everything down to the studs in the spring. So I think the thing that this system does is allow our guys to be able to have enough bandwidth and flexibility to alter schemes to fit the guys that we have from week to week. And that's what it does. Whether it's, again, in the run game, gap schemes, perimeter play, zone, mid zone, wide zone, like we can activate those based on who we're facing and who we have available. And I think from a language standpoint, we've cleaned that up and from the time we got here.
It sounded to me like Nick Caley was trying to explain to the media yesterday that, hey man, we've really tried to simplify this thing, tear it down to the studs from day one, and we're getting better. We're working on this and all that. But game plan offense has been a big thing, okay? And I want to know from you, your opinion, can both be true? Can you have a game plan offense and ask players at various positions on a week in and week out basis to do something that the opposition doesn't necessarily do very well? Hence, we need to put this in our game plan and take advantage of that, a la, what do we do well? Let's make them adjust to us. And we're not questioning every single week, like in my opinion, the Texans did last year.
Yeah.
And they ultimately failed. We are going to ask our players to do something every single week that they are not exceptional at. They are not good at. They don't fit.
I felt like when he, and I'm going to answer your question, but I felt like when I'm listening to Nick Caley here talk about how it's not a Patriots offense, it almost is like an alcoholic telling you how he's not an alcoholic, but how he has a drink with every meal. It's like, I'm not an alcoholic. I just have a beer with breakfast. I have a lemon drop for lunch, and then lemon I have a whiskey and Coke for dinner. But I ain't got no alcoholic problem. I don't have a problem with alcohol. I just drink with every meal. That's it. You know, there's no big deal.
Yeah.
So it, that part did not make sense to me. But to your question, like, I prefer to force the issue. It's the offense that knows what play they're going to run. It's the offense that knows when the ball is going to be snapped, right? And so from that standpoint, you should be the one that's initiating the response, not the one that's responding to whatever is being initiated. So to me, just from a philosophical standpoint, I would prefer you identify who you are and identify what it is that you do well and lean into that, stick to that. Don't try to adjust it because you perceive the other team to not do this well or to not adjust to this thing well. No, you don't do enough things well enough to talk about how we're going to do all of these different things. Find out who you are and be who that is. Don't try to reinvent yourself every damn week in the sake of, hey, we're gonna be a week-to-week game plan offense. I like it from an ideal standpoint. Like, hey, we're gonna scout the opponent and play to their weaknesses. That's great.
Yeah.
Do that as best you can. But at some point, rubber might gotta meet the road, and you gotta be whoever it is that you are. And the issue that I have with the Texans is it's like both. They don't have an identity or know exactly who and what they are, nor are they good enough to do this on the fly. We're
right.
gonna attack the
Man.
Opposing defense's weaknesses. Like, you're not good enough to do that. Nor have you established what it is exactly you are good at, who
100%.
Exactly it is you are. And so that is the fork in the road for this offense, for this team overall. The conundrum, if you will, for this team is, like, to hell with just trying to, like, adjust to the defense. Try to dictate and actually identify who it is that you are supposed to be.
Right. I don't think
they haven't
that,
done that.
I don't think that can happen. And it doesn't sound like that is going to happen with the way that Nick Caley in that clip just described their process.
Yeah.
It's not Tom Brady. It's not even the guy. It's not anybody else that understands an offense like a similar to even Tom Brady.
What is the game plan offense, Sean? Not to cut you off, but what is the game plan offense done for them in the red zone? Oh, new spoiler alert, they don't get to the red zone very often.
Yeah.
Oh, another spoiler alert, when they get there, they don't score. They have yet to score
right.
in the red zone. What has the game plan offense done for them on third down? Oh, spoiler alert, they're god-awful on third down. So, like, help me help you. Help me understand where it is that we're going with this whole thing.
You're expecting a third-year quarterback, and the arrogance, the confidence that Nick Caley is at least trying to portray that he has, you're expecting almost by his explanations to get something that a 6, 7, 8 year veteran quarterback should be able to do crammed into a third year quarterback. And in a lot of cases, for the players that you're having to rely upon, they're in their first year.
Yeah, dude.
Not just with this team, but within an NFL offense. Like, I just don't understand. And I do feel like in some sense of the way that we're wasting our time kind of discussing these kinds of things.
Nonsense.
I feel like there is a smoke and mirrors, you know, situation going on here that, you know, there's not transparency ever, really, with an NFL team in that – they're going to make it very difficult for us to kind of piece together what's really going on here.
Yeah.
And I do think there's something larger. And to me, it's not as simple as, well, Joe Mixon's not a part of this offense, and if he was, that would fix everything.
He would help.
Well,
he would help.
You know, he would help. He helped last year.
Yeah.
And he had a really good season last year. But I guarantee you that 70% of what he did as a running back was off script. At least that might be being super conservative.
Oh, you know.
I guarantee. And so how much would he help? Yeah, he'd help a lot because great running backs are instinctive. They've got great vision. And never mind just his physical ability that he still holds at the age of 30, 31, 32, whatever he is now. Like, to make chicken salad out of chicken, you know what?
Yeah,
he would help. But in terms of sustainability, this offense, mind you, with a healthy Joe Mixon for 13, 14 games last season, was not able to sustain drive after drive after drive. They are not in the conversation of the Chiefs or the Ravens or the Bengals or the Rams or any other elite offensive football team that you had pegged coming into the season or that is starting to look like we should have had pegged this season.
This is what has to change. Because, look, men lie, women lie. The numbers do not lie. These are the facts. The Texans, and I know three games, small sample size, but it's enough. We've had three games. The Texans offense, last in the league in third down offense, last in the league in red zone offense, last in the league in scoring. Scoring offense, red zone offense, third down. Last in the league. That has to change. The people that are out here at Pop Stroke with us deserve better. The Texans fans that show up that are going to be there at NRG Stadium deserve better than that. The folks that were at the stadium for Monday Night Football to start the season against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers deserve better than that. And to be honest, they deserve better than that for themselves. Like, you don't put all of this work in to be last in all of the relevant categories and miss me with all of this game plan stuff. Force the issue. Game plan offense so far got you last, and last in scoring, red zone, and third down offense.
Nobody saw this coming. Not even, especially not even Texans ownership, the decision makers. We'll let you hear from one of them when we return. Hannah McNair sat down with KHOU 11's Mia Gradney and talked about the surprise that it has been to see her Houston Texans football team start off 0-3 to this point. We'll have it for you next. It's The Drive, Sports Radio 610.
Does this count as us being on your show?
I don't see no bitches nowhere around here.
It's an Academy Sports and Outdoors Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from Pop Stroke and Katie, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Yeah, in for Ron Hughley and Clint Sterner, Sean Bajani and Brandon Scott today, broadcasting live from Pop Stroke in Katie. You know, when you do remotes, like, you hear people all the time, oh, it's a fantastic place, great drinks, great food. No. All that BS aside, you cannot beat this. It is a Tiger Woods-designed mini golf course that is pristine. If you've ever been to, like, East River 9, this is a mini version of that. And it's maybe better because we've got Shannon and Steve out here. We've got the commissioner and we've got Sissy out here. Angie just walked in. Guy Jean's here. Andrew's here. Like, there are...
Just met my guy,
Holy
Irwin.
Smokes, Captain Fireball.
Yeah.
He's giving me, like, the mean eyes. He's like, hey, Bert.
Yeah.
Don't forget about that tailgate, big dog.
Yeah, we could have led with Captain Fireball. We got you, Captain Fireball.
Captain Fireball.
Just met my guy, Irwin, as well.
Yeah. Irwin?
Yeah.
Where's Irwin?
Irwin's right here in the Aggie shirt.
Oh, dude, I owe a special bit of gratitude for Irwin hooking it up with the box set of the Sopranos, in which I have not yet watched at all. Wait, I have a lot of homework to do.
Box set? That's a collector's item, dude. There's an app for that.
I felt guilty about accepting it. Trust me. I still have it. I didn't even want to unwrap the damn thing.
I hear you.
But, yeah, I need to get on the Sopranos situation. Come on out here, man. Hang with us. It's a beautiful day, the best day of the season, setting up for what is hopefully a magical run by the Astros. You need to win out. Setting up for what could be the game that maybe just turns this whole thing around for the Houston Texans. Boy, oh boy, that's what ownership is hoping for. Everybody involved, invested with the Houston Texans is hoping for this weekend. B. Scott, do you remember earlier this offseason there was like an exclusive done with Cal McNair and Hannah McNair? And they might have said it on one of our shows, you know, on Sports Radio 610. They come on In the Loop or Payne and Pendergast.
Yeah, they did the media. They did the car wash. They went everywhere and talked.
Do you remember them talking about saying, you know, look, we're taking the next step this year. You know, there's no more divisional round losses in the playoffs. Like, the next step is AFC title game, and maybe within that next step is Super Bowl. Like, they really – they did everything but maybe even say Super Bowl. Well, up until this week. Mia Gradney of KHOU Channel 11 sat down with Hannah McNair, and they discussed the 0-3 start by the Houston Texans. And wait till you listen to the reaction that Hannah McNair's had up to this point.
0-3. What needs to be done?
As a fan, I did not see this happening. And ownership did not see this happening. As someone in this building who's watched all offseason, who knew we were close last year and did everything we thought we needed to build it to a successful organization, did not see us at 0-3. I still have faith in them. I still have faith in our quarterback. I still have faith in our coach. I still have faith in everybody on that field. I want to encourage the fans, please stick with us, because ultimately it's about this community and what can we do that can uplift this community to levels it never has seen. Well, that's winning a ring. And so we won't stop until we can get there, and that's our ultimate goal.
Yeah. All right, so your first takeaway on the Hannah McNair comments with Mia Gradney on KHOU Channel 11.
Yeah, Mia Gradney, also a noted fine Sam Houston State alum I did want to mention. But as far as Hannah, man, you can just hear the disappointment and the letdown that's really, like, just reflected in everybody who...
Disgust.
I mean, there was just so much anticipation. If for nothing else, just the thought that, like, we've had a good time the last couple of years, right? Like, we've enjoyed this ride. So, at the very least, and this is where I was, I thought we'd get to go on that ride again. Like, just set aside the Super Bowl for a second. I thought at the very least we had done enough to tread water, to keep our heads above water, to stand pat, and to be what we have been over the last couple of years. We as a community, we as a city, I'm talking specifically about the Texans as a team, but to be collectively where we've been, feeling good about our football team, feeling like they're headed in the right direction, feeling like they're close, as they talk about all the time with the offense, but in a different context, feeling like they're close, right there on the cusp, on the edge. And then the disappointment to find out that, like, not only are you not necessarily taking that next step that she talks about, being close and then just, you know, upping the ante a little bit.
Yeah.
But it looks like you're taking a step back. You're 0-3. We talked a lot on this show today about mathematical odds and how 0-3 is not pretty and not a favorable odd, how 0-4 is even worse. And so what I hear there is just real, genuine disappointment and letdown for somebody that expected a lot more, thought that they would see a lot more. To be fair, when this schedule came out, I don't think any of us had them at 0-3. Maybe you had them losing to the Rams in the opener. Maybe you had them losing Monday Night Football, the season opener, the home opener. Maybe you thought, hey, division games are weird. They'll win those first two games or split those first two games, but whatever happens with the Jags, I can live with it. You didn't have them losing all three games in the fashion that they've lost them. And when I say the fashion, I'm talking about some of the incompetence, some of the things that we've talked about already. Like, what I hear there from Hannah is just utter disappointment, and in some cases I would say disbelief, that we are where we are right now.
You know, John McClain has said it on our show, Area 45, multiple times this season, in that nobody had come into the season under more pressure for the Houston Texans than their offensive line coach, Cole Popovich. Nobody. Because he was one guy that was here last season that actually got a promotion from within the worst position group on the team. Mm-hmm. He got a promotion. Yeah. He gets a higher paycheck. And with that comes higher and more responsibility. Never mind Nick Haley. But I'm going to tell you this right now. The one thing that I took from that Hannah McNair, and this is what I have devolved into becoming, is a person that has to read between the lines and connect the dots that sometimes maybe aren't even there, is she said, we believe in the quarterback. We believe in the coach. We believe in everybody on that field. Yep. I took that as in everybody that is still wearing a Texans uniform playing.
Yeah, somebody noticeably missing there.
I don't hear from Hannah McNair that she believes in the assistant coaches, i.e. maybe at least one, Nick Haley. And I don't know if I'm trying to turn something into something that is nothing.
Oh, you went in a different direction there.
But that is what I heard. And I'm telling you right now, you might even win this game, B. Scott. But if you win it uncomfortably, if you get by the skin of your teeth, because the defense does something that it has been trying like hell to do the first 3 weeks, and that saved their ass. If they win this game on Sunday like that, and then they presume to go into Baltimore and they lose, convincingly lose, like we all suspect them to do.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, some combination of Nick Haley and Cole Popovich, I would not blink at all if their heads rolled going into the bye week after the conclusion of week five.
That's interesting that that's where you went with it, because I thought that I kind of took that for granted. For me, that was an easy one. Like, obvious, like they are the most dispensable, just as they were their predecessors in Bobby Slowick and Chris Strausser, the most dispensable of the, let's call it, hierarchy, if you will. That to me was a given. I had a different Nikki C in mind, a different Nick C that was missing from that collection of folks that she talked about.
Mm-hmm.
She talked about the head coach, the quarterback, and the players
too.
On the field.
Yeah.
She didn't say, and I don't know if this was necessary, and I don't know if it was like a purposeful oversight on her part. I'm not saying that it was. It just stood out to me,
yeah.
And I noticed it. There was no, I believe in the cook that's in the kitchen. I believe in the one that put these ingredients together. I believe in the person that made this team. Because when it comes down to it, the issue might turn out to be that this team just flat out isn't good enough and isn't talented enough. And when we get to the point about Nick Haley and Cole Popovich, who really, and this is a question that I don't know if we can fully answer right here and right now, but who really is responsible for those moves? Not just firing Bobby Slowick, but specifically hiring those specific guys. Those guys got more ties to Nick Caserio, the guy that made the team, than they got to D'Amico Ryans, right?
Quite frankly, so
the person that put the team together and the person that presumably, and I'm kind of spitballing here on making the hire per se, but those are the ones, or he's the one that those guys got the most connection to.
Yeah.
All right? That's the commonality. That's the same guy. The same guy that did not facilitate or put together a talented enough roster is the same guy who has the closest connections to the coaches that are in that are dispensable or that are most dispensable and have not worked out so far. So to me, when we talk about accountability, we talk about the hierarchy. I was having this conversation with Reggie during a break. What's the hierarchy? Not just in terms of who's in charge, but in terms of accountability, whose head is going to roll, which heads are going to roll if this thing goes south. And that's where I'm looking at. I'm looking at the guy that was tasked with up in the ante, with taking you from here to there, taking you from a 10-win team to an 11 or 12. We were having conversations about having a bye week, having home field advantage, finally going to the AFC Championship game. Who was supposed to put that team together? I like Nick Caserio. I like him a lot. But the fact of the matter is, this is a results-based business, and if this thing goes left, he's the first person that I would see to be held accountable and the noticeable name that was not included.
I don't hate having those conversations. We deserve, as a fan base, to have those conversations. It's been too damn long since we've legitimately been able to do that, particularly with this Texans team. Let's just keep it at that for now. But it was, to a certain degree, we bit off more than we could chew. We ourselves got a little bit too big for our britches, because you want to go from, you know, nothing to being in a conversation legitimately, no questions asked, with the hierarchy of the NFL the last decade. And that is the Steelers, and that is the Ravens, and that is the Bengals, and that is the Steelers, if I didn't mention them. I meant to say the Chiefs, at least, number one. But we're not there yet as a fan base. The organization is not there yet. Text message: literally everyone saw this debacle coming. Ownership once again showing their ignorance and tone deafness. Fire anyone related to Patriot South and we might have a chance. I disagree with that. Literally everyone saw this debacle coming. I don't think that that's fair.
Not 0-3.
But not 0-3.
And not looking like this.
And certainly not looking like this.
So
when people say this is the worst offense that you've ever seen from a Houston Texans football team, recency bias, I think, is very much a thing there, but it's really the only relevant thing. And so none of that other stuff matters. Context, whatever.
They overstated the impact that Nick Haley and Cole Popovich would have.
Could have, yeah.
And they understated the desperation that was with this roster by not making enough changes to it. I think they understated how badly they needed to make changes to the roster and overstated how much of an impact those coaching changes would make.
They made significant changes, though. And what they'd been lauded for within their first 2 years, and lucky for them, they hadn't really had to delve deep, really, into offensive wholesale changes. Okay? You remember what this offensive line looked like before this season. They'd went out and they'd taken some gambles, right, in terms of just the offensive line. They went out and they got Michael Dieter. Well, he played quite a bit of center for the Texans, and you needed him to. And their sixth-round pick, Jared Patterson, nobody's played more center than him, even to this day, over the last 3 years.
Yeah, but those are moves along the margins, man. They weren't expecting those guys to be impact players.
No, you weren't, but weren't they impact players? Because with those marginal moves, with an above-average running back in Joe Mixon, he was able to do what he was able to do last year behind that offensive line. I don't know what he would have looked like if you replaced the two from 23 to 24 or from 25 to 24. I don't know. But this is the first year in which you had looked like and convinced yourselves, the fan base and the nation, that you're ready to ascend and take the next step and be one of those elite teams in the NFL. And you decided to screw with the most important thing. You're going to destroy the Great Wall. Yeah. And you're going to, you know, completely change face and not do anything to kind of complement that as a backup plan.
Yeah.
Where you brought in Christian Kirk, nice player, been a 1,000-plus yard receiver once before in this league, solid guy. Injury concern last year, broken collarbone. Can't fault him for that, no soft tissue, whatever. You didn't bring in a big dude to kind of, you know, usurp, like, well, the what if. It's, we're going to do this, and, oh, by the way, get somebody that has never done the job before, and you thought better of that guy than the guy that, two guys, that knew this team better than anybody you could have brought in. Bobby Slowick or Gerard Johnson. And if you do fire Nick Caley at some point in time this season and make that move to Gerard Johnson, that's not waving the magic wand and curing everything. Then I have more questions. Why didn't you make that move this offseason? And if you didn't make that move this offseason, that tells me Nick Caserio, coming full circle now, the other Nick and the C that you were looking for me to bring up, that's when you hold him accountable.
Yeah.
Because I said... by changing this offensive line, Nick Caserio has single-handedly attached himself to the hip of whatever fate this O-line gives this Texans team going forward. Right now, it's not good.
I know we got to get out of here and get the break, but look, you just heard from Hannah McNair. If you still believe in the quarterback, if you still believe in the head coach, if you still believe in the players on the field, which I think there's fair question about that, like even just that premise, it is fair to question all of those things. But if you still believe in all of those things and it turns out that changes have to be made because whatever you're doing is not working, okay, who goes? Because, I mean, we just checked off pretty much everything that you could hold accountable. Still believe in the head coach. Still believe in the quarterback. Still believe in the players. You already made that offensive coordinator / offensive line coach move, and that didn't fix it. So now what? What move do you make if you still believe in everything
else? You know the answer, and there's always a domino effect, and it's going to hurt. It's going to get worse before it gets better.
Ooh,
I think you know the answer.
Don't tell me that.
Coming up next, what does J.J. Watt think of the Texans right now at 0-3? We'll get you that audio coming up next. It's The Drive.
Former Pizza Hut delivery driver, J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt was doing all his ridiculous you know.
It's an Academy Sports and Outdoors Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from Pop Stroke and Katie, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
In for Ron Hughley and Clint Sterner, Sean Bajani and Brandon Scott. B. Scott in the house, Pop Stroke in Katie. Beautiful, beautiful day. The golf course actually very, very busy right now. You can come out and enjoy a number of things. They've got, on the first floor alone, two massive full bars, great food, beers flowing, people having a good time out here. Shout out to all the loyal Sports Radio 610 listeners that came out, from Shannon and Steve to Andrew to Guy Jean to the commish, Sissy.
Captain Fireball
Angie,
was just here.
I see you, Angie. And boy, I met Irwin and a number of people. And Reggie Atatula's out here. If you'd like to talk a little sports, just to kind of catch up with what's going on while we're doing our thing, Reggie is more than happy. He's been engaging the listeners out here. So a lot to talk about. Very busy, very important, vital, pivotal, all of those things weekend coming up for Houston sports.
If you come out here by yourself and you're worried about not having anybody to talk to, there are plenty of people out here, especially if you're a Texans fan or a Houston sports fan. Plenty of people out here with us right now at Pop Stroke that are more than willing to talk to you, and none more, maybe, than my guy Reggie. Reggie will talk to you about anything because he's that kind of affable guy.
He loves it.
So take advantage of that while the dude is here.
There's a reason why he's a staple of invite on steak night.
There you go.
Amongst the Sports Radio 610 staff.
There you go.
He's just an all-around good dude, fun guy to have a good time with. How much, B. Scott, do you invest in the opinion of J.J. Watt, given that his platform now is an NFL analyst, and that there's going to be some level of bias when he's asked particular questions about a former team of his, namely the Houston Texans?
Oh, J.J. felt like even when he was a player here was a truth teller. Now, he has a very carefully crafted public image, and so like to some degree, and I think this, you know, at some point probably even rub people the wrong way, but he's a politician of some sorts, like, you know, because he's just that big of a deal and that big of an entity, and so you have to kind of keep that in mind as a caveat. But in terms of like just telling you what he thinks and giving you a true and honest opinion, J.J. Watt, I feel like, has never really shied away from that. He had that famous rant, or infamous, however you want to look at it, in 2020, the COVID year, when we were still doing Zoom press conferences and they had that 0-4 start, of like just talking about how it just wasn't good enough, how the fans deserved better. And he wasn't afraid to rip the teammates and just kind of just tell you what it was. So I view him as a truth teller overall, even if you kind of have the caveat of him being a little bit of a politician.
Well, he was on one of my favorite truth tellers shows currently going, in the Pat McAfee show this week. J.J. Watt on the Houston Texans with Pat McAfee. Take a listen.
The first 2 weeks, I mean, you got the Rams and you got the Bucks, and they go down and they're very tight, very close games against first in their division teams. So those are very tough losses, but they're losses that you can look at and be like, yeah, those are two very good teams, and we played right down to the wire. When I got out of the booth this week, when I was done calling the Steelers-Pats, and I checked my phone and I see that the Texans lost to the Jaguars, that's one where you're like, oh, okay, this is not what is normally happening. Because you kind of, after the first 2 weeks, you're like, all right, we're going to figure it out and get on track. And clearly didn't get on track this week. The offense is struggling, haven't gotten it going. So there has to be some form of improvement shown there. And from what I'm seeing, what I'm reading, sounds like the play action game isn't quite there. And it just hasn't developed. This offensive scheme that they've wanted to develop this offseason when they brought in Kaylee hasn't quite hit the ground running the way that everybody expected it to from everything we've heard all offseason.
Yeah.
All right. So
I thought he was kind there.
Yeah. In all fairness, B. Scott, he said nothing. Like, that's J.J. Watt. That could have been you. That could have been me. That could have been anybody sitting around here that has watched this team, that has formulated an opinion. That is a consensus opinion take that J.J. Watt had. Nothing special about that. So what is it, J.J.? Are you in or are you out on Houston?
All right, and down at the Texans, Jade, you're not dead on them? You don't think they're completely out?
No. Okay. I'm definitely not dead on them.
Who are they playing this weekend?
Titans.
You're out on them.
They're laying seven against Tennessee.
I don't even know.
I have. Tennessee's going through some stuff. Tennessee's going through some stuff.
So are you guys. I think you guys are going through. So you just cut CJGJ out of the middle of nowhere. What's that all about?
What is that about?
Yeah, no, I will actually give Tennessee Jeffrey Simmons playing phenomenal football.
Great.
Despite a tough start here, Jeffrey Simmons, phenomenal football player.
Just pivoted away from CJGJ.
J.J. is very much a week-to-week guy right now, okay? That's number one. Why is he a week-to-week guy? Because he's calling a game every single week, okay, for CBS. By the way, J.J. Watt is calling the Houston Texans and the Baltimore Ravens,
yeah,
week five game,
yeah,
after this. Probably why he's not really too up to date on what's going on this week with the Texans. But what do you think about that? Because I just asked, I'd like to feel the crowd out. I just asked two people over there. Urban was one of them. Hey, what's your vibe on the game this weekend? Does the history mean anything to you? Does four teams in the last 26 seasons mean anything to you? Six teams since 1979 mean anything to you? And they said, yeah, it absolutely means something. Context is important, though. What is your vibe?
Yeah, I think the history absolutely matters. I got them winning this game just simply because, as I mentioned before, they're playing a team that somehow is even worse than they are, right? The Titans, for as bad as it is in Houston right now, it's even worse out there in Nashville. But JJ's, specific to JJ's comment, I thought what he said really reflected, like, the, I guess, the offensive part of last week against the Jaguars would really kind of set a lot of people off. I'll speak for myself, what set me off specifically. There were ways to, and I don't think this was a good idea, but you could explain away losing to the Rams on the road to open,
yeah,
the season in a first-year play caller's first game calling plays. You could excuse that. You could excuse a one-point loss to a Tampa team that you beat 2 years ago and is effectively the same team with a last-second or a last-minute drive, if you will, with the whole, you know, C.J. Stroud, Tank Dell thing. We remember 2023 and that kind of being the world's introduction to the Texans as we know it. But the Jags, that was when it was really time to check up a little bit and say, hey, wait a minute. Something ain't right here. This isn't.
Oh,
look, they've only lost one score games. They've only lost close games. But this is the one that was the least excusable. This is the one that you can at least look at and find ways to rationalize and explain away. Forget the fact that the Jags aren't a very good team. How about the fact that they were trying to give you the game and you just wouldn't go out there and take,
right,
it? So at no matter what angle, whether it's, hey, you played tough against the really good teams, but you didn't quite have enough to win, couldn't finish the game. That's okay. You were going up against a really good team. Or if it's a, hey, you were playing against a bad team and you couldn't figure that out. Either side of the ledger, it's bad.
Yeah.
So, and JJ reflects that in his comments.
Yeah, no, I think well said, B. Scott. Coming up next, 5 o'clock fire, day's top stories. We will get to them all. I would imagine we have some things to tell you in regards to the Houston Astros, Texans-Titans injury report coming up, and, hey, man, Ryder Cup. I got bad news for Team USA, man. We'll have it all for you next. It's 5 o'clock fire. It's The Drive, Sports Radio 610.